There's too many children still dropping out of school. There is no sense in wasting our most valuable resource, which is an educated and talented and capable young man or woman.
Closing time, the close of opportunity.
I started skipping school a couple of times, just to go out with kids and fool around. And after that, I started losing interest in school, and then
the door is shut behind you. You're alone now. You're free.
You're all mixed up. You don't know what you want to do. You just want to get out. And you feel you'll solve all your problems getting a job and working, and you don't even think about the future. Your mind is very limited. Just next year and half a year, you know, short terms, you know what I mean? For the next day, you know, you're living from day to day, you know, and you don't think of, that time you're not mature enough to put everything into consideration, balance everything out, and realize, I mean, you can tell somebody at that time, somebody older can say, hey, you're doing the wrong thing, but to them, they're not going to change their mind in one least bit, you see? Maybe deep down inside, subconsciously, they know they're doing the wrong thing, but there's nothing you can tell them when you're younger. You can't tell, you know what I mean? You can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink, and he has to make up his own mind.
If education is to them a continual frustration in terms of being able to do what is asked of them, then certainly they're going to get discouraged, and furthermore, they're going to get bitter about this. And after a while, they just drag their feet and they're just waiting to leave at the age of 16.
Burton Hickok, Hartford psychologist for the elementary schools, has seen the blank faces staring at teachers, kids without any discernible interest, occupying a school desk because they have to. Youngsters who are about to close the door to opportunity and must walk that bridge between adolescence and adulthood alone, fighting frustration and despair. These are the dropouts. Youngsters who have little to offer our society except trouble, hardship, and self-pity. There are lots of figures, loads of statistics, innumerable glossy, sugar-coated terms that describe their plight. But you don't really need to know them. The problem is here, now. And Connecticut must share equal responsibility and blame with the nation. Like a lot of youngsters her age, pretty, blonde, blue-eyed Donna Levitt of East Hartford High School has seen a good number of her classmates give up and quit. Maybe she felt sorry for them, but she wrote a poem about them called Decision.
He sat so silent in his class, a young boy, 16 years of age, and asked himself this present day, shall I quit school or shall I stay? It wasn't just the only time this question dwelt within his mind. The problem was just what to do. He had to pick between the two.
The first thing I tried to do, I just wanted to get out. You know, just wanted to get out as fast as I could. Being there was felt all pushed in, you know, boxed in, and I just felt inferior. I think I felt definitely, you know, I felt when you're in school, I think you had a definite inferiority complex, and to try to equalize for this, you try to act very bullish, you know. Why did you say that, dude?
Once out, the dropout's routine is dull, without much meaning. It may mean an uneventful afternoon just riding around in a jalopy, preceded by a morning of just lying in bed, to be followed by a night of just hanging around. There were 5,400 dropouts in Connecticut last year. Wallace Lornell, chief social worker for the Hartford Board of Education.
I can think of a case where a child would be considered a potential dropout, even though he's only 10 years old. Here's a child who has not come to school because his mother died three or four years ago. His father is employed in a in a large store in which he does not have an opportunity to supervise his child. So the father works very long hours. The boy is a very bright, charming youngster in appearance, and you try to talk to him about why aren't you coming to school, Pedro. He says, I come to school, but I don't have no pants. And you look into the situation. He's got pants, but he just doesn't use this as an excuse. So he was absent, you know, maybe 2 days a week. Maybe next week it'd be three. Maybe he'd be in for 4 days in a row. So the worker became involved in this on the basis of attendance and home conditions, and had quite a few discussions with the father about having a neighbor wake the boy up, because he goes to work before the child goes to work, and the boy just pops back in bed again. And for quite a long time, the worker went to this home, and every morning on his way to school, and would knock on the door and say, Pedro, it's time to get up, got to get up to school. He says, okay, I'm coming. And he got this kid up to come to school.
Reasons vary, come in assorted types to fit individual personalities. You ask a dropout and he'll probably tell you he just wanted out. At St. Joseph College, child study and elementary education expert Sister Mary DeLord directs the school's young children's division and was a member of the President's Committee on Children and Growth.
All of these children who find school too difficult want to leave as early as they can. And usually they're right about it, because unless we can reach them, discover why they're so eager to get out and try some other kind of a life, we aren't going to help them. And every year, this sense of cumulative hostility or a sense of cumulative failure mounts higher and higher until a child can really have some severe personality difficulties before he's old enough to leave school. And after he leaves school, then of course he's the prey to whatever may happen to him while he's trying to get a job or while he's walking the streets.
Said Attorney General Robert Kennedy, if the present trend continues, we are going to have 7.5 to 8 million high school dropouts in the next 10 years. In some areas, this means we're going to have 70 to 80% of the young people unemployed.
I think it's something that starts when you're 3 years old. I think it builds up pattern, you know, builds up years and years, and takes its hold. It's a hard thing to shake off.
We need to pay great attention to the environment in which many of our children are brought up. Our biggest problem at the moment are people who are living in culturally deprived areas. And when these children, possibly because mothers are working, possibly because fathers are deserted, altogether because there's very little in the household, very little in the family, to give them the kind of play life that helps them to develop intellectually. All of these children come into kindergarten not ready for kindergarten, and your problem begins then.
While there are a number of images in the public's mind of these youngsters from the poorest living conditions, the one that is particularly popular today is the one that shows an uncontrolled, aggressive, sexually loose, primitive, and insensitive youngster. The image that perhaps grew out of writings by Tennessee Williams and portrayed on the screen by Marlon Brando. The blackboard jungle picture, a dangerous image. While it is true that a great number of dropouts come from the poorest homes, there are many from middle-class and upper-class homes as well. The dropout disease leaves no class immune.
With spirits high, he made his choice, but deep inside an inner voice would probe his conscience night and day. You chose to leave, you should have stayed. But he refused to heed this call. He really thought he knew all. Again it came without an end. You need your education, friend. But once again he went his way, preparing for the following day, to find a job that was to be, a way to make the others see that he was taking heaven's road. His future lay in paths of gold.
At first you feel good and you feel great. You know, you see how you're driving around, you have a little money in your classmates. After a while you begin to feel out of place, and then you begin to feel sad, and then definitely you decide, well, the hell with this, I want to get ahead.
Social workers are summoned to help sometimes by anxious parents unable to cope with their children. and sometimes by school principals whose staff is already overworked. At the Family Service Society, caseworker Ann Bashand has dealt with all types of young people's problems.
I worked with one girl who was of average intelligence. She wanted to leave school. I think this was, again, the girl's home problems. The dropping out of school was only a symptom of it. She knew that wearing the very short kilts were outlawed, or they were not supposed to wear them. She wore one and went directly to the principal and asked the principal, how does he like it? And the principal said, you either change it or you don't come back to school the next day. This solved it. She wore it the next day, and eventually she was expelled from school. This was a girl who came from a family whose mother had been physically handicapped since a childhood. And I think the mother's own fears that someday she might be left alone and not have anyone to care for her was unconsciously keeping the girls from growing up.
In the teenage world of bewildering jargon and a banging and a twanging music, the adult is an unwanted authority, someone not to be trusted, someone, they say, who does not understand. In an age to perfect space systems and speed up school science and mathematics programs, we may have overlooked the fundamental ties that bind the adolescent with the reality of the adult world. We tend to criticize, scold, and look suspiciously at their drives and attitudes. In Los Angeles, Arnold Fletcher, associate professor of history at nearby San Fernando Valley State College, was appointed an examiner looking into the newly opened teen clubs controversy. The trouble with teenagers, he said, starts with a tiny minority. There's a somewhat violent reaction to authority in a small group of people in this age bracket. I suppose, basically, they are insecure and need to be with their peers. He continues, I think this is a manifestation of our times, the uncertainty, the insecurity. For some people in the teenage and young adult group, this feeling of insecurity is intolerable, so they seek security in violence and frenzy.
The scene has changed, as you can see. The years have flown most rapidly. An old man sits upon a chair, so all alone, so barren there. The atmosphere is filled with gloom to blend in with the shabby room. And while you're here, he wants to say a few things on the world today.
These fellows are young, they're searching for some kind of identification. They feel quitting school makes them different and gives them a sense of responsibility, you know.
The automobile is the status symbol for many teenagers. So eager are they to get their first car that many a teenager would sacrifice anything, even school, to satisfy this craving. And pretty soon the ownership in itself becomes an economic necessity. A good example came from Alfred Sessa, who tries to get jobs for the youngsters in Stamford schools.
The kid who has economic need doesn't think in terms only of food. If he has a car and he needs money to operate that car, that is a very strong economic need. And we have had cases where boys have walked into my office and declared their intention of leaving school. And after questioning, you finally determine that the only reason they want to leave school is that they have to support an automobile.
The craving for an automobile produces side effects by causing the transformation of quiet neighborhood theaters to teeming parking grounds, the drive-in. Whether their appeal is artificial or superficial, they lure the youngsters in droves, and the screen fare itself is usually tailored to their desires.
The show is about to start, folks. At the refreshment stand...
Last year, I knew it was over 50 girls that left the school, and the funny part of it was most of them were all seniors. I mean, you think that's such a waste because you know, if you're a senior, you only have in the middle of the year, you only have a half a year to go. And it seems such a waste to go to school for 3.5 years and then quit like that. And I don't know why some of them quit when they were almost out of school and they were seniors. Some girls had to quit because they were pregnant.
Some educators lay the blame at the feet of our rich, mobile, status-conscious society. Others say we have forsaken the three R's. Among them is Clarence Nordstrom, a teacher with a prominent Connecticut school system for more than 25 years.
The average youngster needs too much pocket money to carry out his desires. And if he can't get it at home, he's going to earn it somewhere at the expense of school time. Well, there are too many pleasures available today. And also, there's too much time for the youngsters. When their grandfather lived, he had to get up early in the morning and stoke the furnace. When he got through at night, he was tired, ready for bed. He had home chores that took up his time. Today, the youngsters don't have to do that. They have too much time on their hands, too much time and too much money, and too many pleasures to spend the money on. The schools are trying to catch up with the times or stay up with the times by introducing all these frills and progressive ideas. And those are the very things that take the pupil away from the fundamentals, the three R's.
You're aggressive. And some people take their aggression out by going to college, doing a lot of work. Then other people take their aggression out by quitting school. These bright students with A's and B's, they're aggressive. They go home at night and they're angry. They work and they get an A on that paper. And others are aggressive and they fool around in class. And it's the same energy, only it's used in one's going one way and one's going the other way.
We quite often see a pattern of a child who may get along reasonably well until they hit puberty at 12 or 13, and then quite often their problems seem to become increased, and they begin having rebellious not only towards their parents but also towards school personnel as authority figures. Even though they may have gone along quite well up until that time, and been quite conforming, perhaps. And yet they seem to, some of them seem to sort of break out at this point in some of the typical adolescent problems.
Boys don't seem to have as much interest in getting an education as the girls do. I mean, it's mostly the boys who go to college and everything. But in high school, you would never know it because the boys, they don't take an interest in anything but the sports. Everything is sports, football, basketball. But the girls, they're more mature than the boys in that sense. And they seem to take an interest in getting an education than the boys do. The boys seem to be more or less going out for sports, just fooling around. School to them is having a good time.
Faced with the problem of trying to cope with chronically disruptive students who resist education, educators have tended to concentrate on social adjustment, perhaps at the expense of education. Having been given too much to do, the educators have perhaps been trying to do too much.
I go out and stay all night, maybe once in a while. But other than that, I mean, I got a nice family. I get along with them nice, and I like to be around them. And I try to be as much of a son to them as possible. I remember we had a teacher that every time you went to his class, he was supposed to be an English teacher. And English is one of the most important subjects that you can have. And so turn around, that every time we went to his class, most likely he would tell you to put your head on the desk. But seems that he wasn't very interested in the job, all he was interested was with getting his check.
No matter how great the educator's goodwill, it seems questionable whether a school can even substitute for the families of deprived children. A sympathetic teacher can help a basically normal child who has become deviant in behavior or attitude because of a specific problem at home or elsewhere. But there is a point when a child becomes sufficiently disturbed so that the amateur psychiatry that is practiced by teachers is useless. Students then often react with indifference to a teacher's helping hand.
Sometimes teachers be out for themselves and they'd play favorites a lot of times. I don't know, I just didn't go for that. Sometimes I'd skip their class, or we wouldn't get along together. If I'd do something right away, the teacher would holler at me or something. The teacher didn't, could have been me too, I mean. Probably was. Some of the teachers, they were smart people, but they just didn't teach right, I guess. It's something, they just didn't interest me, I mean.
And the teachers themselves, How do they feel? Dr. Garland Fitzpatrick of the State Department of Education.
Basically, they're pretty dedicated people. Now, the adolescent doesn't understand this. He takes it as a more of a personal affront than it really is. The fellow's just trying to relieve a little tension or a little good-natured griping about the situation. Or sometimes it isn't so good-natured. For instance, several schools I visited this spring, the school board did have a policy previously. If a teacher wanted to, say a math teacher in a high school, wanted to visit a high school, neighboring high school, and see what they were doing, a little professional improvement, get a few ideas to bring back and then enrich his program, that was all right. But they rescinded this. They said, no, this isn't right. If you're going off, traipsing off, and look at another school, it's going to cost you a day's pay. Well, this is pretty short-sighted in all. In other words, a teacher feels, well, if they don't care about me going off and they're going to dock me a day's pay, I'm going to be treated like an hourly worker, I'll just stay here and drone on, you know.
I talked with one of the teachers and the guidance counselor, but it was only for once a week, and he couldn't reach you because he could tell you the same thing, but any passer, anybody, you could talk to somebody on the street for 5 minutes and he could tell you the same thing. So you'd have to be with somebody who could reach you.
We put a lot of stress on trying to get problems in elementary school rather than waiting until they get into the high school setting. So if a child has had unpleasant associations with school, he has never been able to achieve, he's always considered school as sort of a necessary evil because somebody has told him to go to school. He hasn't had a feeling of accomplishment in school, and consequently when he arrives at an age, particularly at 16, he knows legally that he does not have to go to school anymore. It's easy for him to use this as a way of avoiding further responsibility.
Many of the difficulties afflicting our schools are caused by our attempt to educate children who probably would not have been in school 25 or 30 years ago. Many of these children would have been sent to work a generation ago. We insist that they attend school, but we have neglected to ensure that they benefit from the hours they spend in class. To some children, the academic routine is dry, the bookwork monotonous. To some children, school seems like a prison, and some react like sullen convicts.
We have to be pretty smart about trying to discover how this child expresses his hostility to school. Maybe he isn't aware that he doesn't like school or that he's having a bad time in school. Often a child says he's lonely in school, the children don't like him. He's probably saying to himself, I just can't get 100 in arithmetic. And the way he feels about himself greatly influences the way his peers react to him. If he doesn't feel that he's pretty fine fellow, the other boys won't feel he's a pretty fine fellow, and none of us want to go through school. It's a lonely child, and there are lonely children in the schools.
If you talk with somebody who's like a psychologist or doctor, they would give you a different approach than a guidance counselor. He'd say, "Hello, how are you? And your name is Bill. And what are you? You know, how have you? Why? What is your problem? You know, what are you?" And he'd tell you the problem, and he'd ask you, "Well, why do you do these things?" And try to say, "No." And the person who is needing help doesn't know why he does these things, and if you ask him, he can't tell you.
The general aspiration level of the parent is probably the prime importance here. If a parent feels that school is important, the child, the pupil, absorbs this feeling and is motivated to do something about it. If the parent doesn't care, the child tends not to care. One of the things that why teachers get discouraged, though, in places like this, is that they're interested, but no one else is. And so pretty soon they say, well, why should I fight, you know, the whole thing myself?
No, the parents say, well, let them go to work and get a job, or they attack the kid in such a way by saying, you quit school, you're no good, it makes the kid worse. Instead of going to him and trying to help him, you yell at him, that only drives him farther away.
And what of the slow learner? Do teachers have the time and desire to help them? Can they get their material across?
This is one of the things that teachers have been trying to do for years. We try to get across, if you do this, things are going to be better years later. But they're not really interested in years later. They're interested in now. And the type of a boy or girl that can conceive what his life's going to be like years later, generally speaking, not always, generally speaking, is the kind of boy or girl that really kind of enjoys learning Latin and history because it's all part of the same ball of wax. It's an abstract concept. They have to visualize what life is going to be like later.
When I was just a young schoolboy, I used my future as a toy. By quitting school, it's plain to see, my lack of knowledge ruined me. And no one knew quite what to do. My parents tried and found out, too, that I was doing what I said without a single word of dread. And then I finally left my home to be completely on my own. My jobs were fine, oh yes indeed, if mere work is all you need, like loading trucks and pumping gas. I knew this really couldn't last. I tried to change my job, and yet, this was the only kind I'd get.
A friend of mine, he's a man, and he's in one of my classes. He's 30 years old, and talking to him, he's married now. He's been married 10 years. He has two children. When he was younger, he left school, and he just didn't give a damn. He just thought, you know, he wanted to get out and have a good time. He was a wise kid. He even said to me, yeah, he says, I was just like you, hot-headed, you know? He says, I didn't change my mind for, I went in the Army, and now I'm sorry. He says, I got a job, I work, I get $90 a week, and he says, you know what a job I do? Any dummy can do it, really, you know? And I said, well, I don't say that. I mean, you've been working for 5 years, and he does some kind of, I don't know what type of work, for some big factory or something. But he realizes now that, because now he has a wife and two kids, and he doesn't earn that much money, and his wife has to work, and it's, you know, he struggles from week to week. It's just a continual struggle for existence.
U.S. industry has already modernized so that the labor cost of producing goods from toothbrushes to turbans fell by 2% last year. But the price of automation is unemployment, where the real overcapacity in United States industry is today. Modernization means replacing men with machines, which cost less than people over the long haul, are more productive, and do not take coffee breaks or join labor unions. Automated elevators, automatic stockroom machinery, automated steel mills, and countless other devices are turning the underskilled and the undereducated into unemployables. And when the dropout faces an interview for a job, the answer is usually the same. John Dewhurst, president of the National Tool, Die, and Precision Machining Association.
We put on lads that are not high school graduates that are dropouts. We do. However, we're pretty slow about it, because if a kid has dropped out of high school, he hasn't had the stick-to-itiveness, he may not well have it for our industry.
One of the things that helped me change my mind was when I used to look at the employment office and see the people outside and see the cards being filled out by these people. They had a number on the educational. It started from 1 to 12, 1 to 14 actually, 1 to 16, 4 years of college. And most of them had a circle around 8 or 9. And you could see what they were doing now. You could look at their clothes and what they were wearing, and just a real defeated look. And every time I saw that, I got scared. I guess you really get scared. You get scared for a while and you get worried.
As a specific example, now the employment service that typically gets the first look at these dropouts after they've dropped out, they won't refer them, because for the very same reasons of mental attitude and habit and whatnot, that they dropped out of school because they didn't like the school atmosphere and whatnot. They go down there and the employment service says, if you go back and clean up and look like you want to work and act like you want to work, we'll refer you. Until then, we won't. 99% of them don't return to the employment service. That's just another set of adults that says, you're a bad boy, so to speak, you're not for us. If you change your ways a little bit, why, we'll try to get you a job. The service is the same thing. The service demands much the same kind of discipline, perhaps a little different type, in some ways more rigid. And typically the type of person that drops out of school is the fellow that fills the Judge Advocate General's court-martial dockets from time to time. So these things have to be learned one way or another, sometime, by boys and girls.
Out of school, without a job, nothing to do. Crime comes easy to boys like that, and it does come to many. When it does, the cycle may mean the beginning of the end. Thomas Coe, probation officer at Hartford's juvenile court.
This youngster was doing so poorly in school that he could just as easily have been referred by the school authorities for truancy or ungovernable behavior in school. He found it extremely difficult to take any kind of authoritative approach on the part of anyone, including his parents and including me. It was necessary to bring him into the detention home. Finally, he became involved in further difficulty in the community, and he was committed to the school for boys at Meriden. He came out of the school for boys, got in further difficulty. He was no longer our responsibility then, and he went to Cheshire for automobile theft. He served about 18 months at Cheshire, was released on parole, became involved in an armed robbery, and he told the judge in Superior Court that he did not want to return to Cheshire. He wanted, quote, the big time, unquote, and he was accommodated, and he did send him to Wethersfield.
At the Connecticut School for Boys in Meriden, rehabilitation often works miracles, but it takes time.
If you get off on the wrong feet, about the only thing to do is come here. And once you come here, I mean, you can make it up in your mind because you find out what it's like, you know? And then when you get on back on the outside, you know how to behave yourself because you learn more up here, you know how to behave yourself than you normally would when you was on the outside. So I figured once you start off up here and get the training into your mind and train your mind about how to cooperate in school, that then you would turn around, and when you get back on the outside, it helps you a lot. And you really could go then.
The school superintendent is Norman Morgan.
I think we spend too much time emphasizing a specific thing without building a proper foundation for what might be specific later on when they get old enough to understand what they want to do specifically. And I think we miss a lot of things. Maybe we can make a good scientist, but gosh, if he doesn't know how to live and communicate along with that, I think maybe the country's lost something too.
Despite the rate of dropout, the percentage of young Americans graduating from high school has risen from around 6% in 1900 to 65% today. But our society is so complex in a technological sense that young people who could have worked as unskilled factory or farm laborers have no place to go but street corners. Ironic is the fact that the nation needs 5 million new skilled laborers in the next 5 years. Yet we train about a fifth of this. Is it any wonder when experts shake their heads at the spectacle of skilled jobs going begging, while millions of the unskilled can't find any work? At an address made at the National Education Association, Senator Hubert Humphrey underscored this dilemma.
We have to recognize that the school dropout problem is just another indication in a reverse way of the great need in this country for highly skilled professional and scientific personnel. Our Navy today is in serious danger because of the inadequacy of qualified manpower in the United States of America. It's very difficult sometimes to get fellow Americans aroused over individual well-being, but if I can prove to you that possibly the security of your country, the military security of your country, is threatened because of the inadequate skills of our people, then people will maybe take notice. Or that if you're going to lose money because of the inadequacy of our skills, then possibly we'll get excited.
After years of neglect, vocational technical training has become increasingly important. For the boy or girl who despises the academic approach, the vocational one has renewed their interest. Superintendent of Hartford Schools, Kenneth Meinke.
One of the reasons that we have people dropping out of school today is that many youngsters do not know how to read. They're not interested in an academic approach, a book approach. And if they're going to be kept in school, then it seems to me they should be kept in school for a purpose which is worth their while. And this purpose probably would be vocational.
Now, all the experts with their pet panaceas may say that the high school vocational program is the long-awaited answer to the dropout, to delinquency, to unemployment. But there are almost insurmountable hurdles to be faced. In Connecticut's 14 top-rated state-operated vocational schools, for example, academic subjects are as important as the shop work. F. Wesley Sunderland, guidance coordinator for the Albert E. Prince School, points this out.
Even though students are given a chance to learn something in a vocational school, we cannot get away from the related subject content or the general subject content that goes to make a well-rounded citizen.
Then there is the number of boys and girls who want to attend the vocational schools. There just aren't that many to take care of them all. And the schools are so choosy about who they admit that another door is closed to them. Tom Yozik, director of the Department of Apprenticeship and Training for the State Department of Labor.
We do not have a sufficient number of technical schools around the state to take care of all of the people who are leaving the high schools and not going on to college. This is going to mean that so-called hardcore of unemployed that we have at the present time will be a continuing thing. Unless you take that person from that hardcore and give them something fundamental that they could sell to the industry people and can be utilized towards further skills.
For the youngster who can somehow survive all the pitfalls of unemployment and lack of schooling until he is 18, the state offers a second chance to learn through its adult school programs. In Hartford, Richard Kelly, director of adult education, finds the once uninterested student is now eager to learn.
When they come to us, usually it's after having been out into the business world, and all of a sudden they found out that there was something lacking. In other words, they couldn't achieve or they couldn't get ahead in whatever they had tried to do. Most of them are quite anxious to do it as quickly as possible so that we, when they finish with us, if they do finish, they get a regular high school diploma from the city of Hartford.
I finally met my future wife and settled down to married life. I thought that luck would come my way. I found those bills I couldn't pay.
You might feel good with the money at first, but you see your friend getting out of college and getting a job for $10,000 a year, and you're still making that $3,200 working overtime, you feel pretty bad.
There is another deep irony in this debate of vocational versus academic. The United States work week, already short, is almost certain to become even shorter in the future. Skilled craftsmen, now training in our nation's vocational schools, will have more leisure time than any other job group. But it is they who are getting the least experience in activities that will make leisure creative rather than destructive. This age of automation holds few threats more ominous than an overdose of free time for those unprepared to use it. Vocational training itself is not the answer to dropouts. Part of that answer lies in discovery, in finding the early symptoms.
A little move on the part of the community to found or to make possible preschool facilities for children who live in these blighted areas. 2 days a week in a good settlement that has a good nursery school, 3 days a week would do wonders in getting these children ready for entering school when they're five. And it would cut down the beginning of dropouts early. Dropouts can begin at any time where you have a child making poor progress in school.
Discrimination and minority problems also hover over the dropout. Department of Labor figures on unemployment consistently show that Negroes are the last hired, the first fired. Only one man in 10 in our working force is a Negro, but one in 5 of the unemployed is. Connecticut Commissioner of Education William Saunders.
There has been some feeling, of course, that the Negro has difficulty in finding a place for himself. The important thing is that when they're in school, that they enjoy success. As these culturally disadvantaged people acquire knowledge and skills and are prepared and take their places successfully in their work, they in this fashion can dispel some of the prejudice which, true enough, they find around them.
And the answer, too, lies in helping the community to help the impoverished youngster who appears to have no inbred reason for staying in school. In New Haven, a Ford Foundation grant has created Community Progress Incorporated, CPI as it is better known. Its program director is Bernie Shiftman.
Community Progress sees youth as part of a family unit, as part of a community. As a matter of fact, one of my personal prejudices is that you can't educate youth, that you have to have family education, and that education system, as long as it selects out members of the family for education, is going to fall flat on its head. That what you're going to have to do is figure out new techniques of educating the family group as it moves on through its life cycle. Because the information changes so quickly that I, as an adult, can't help my child with arithmetic anymore. I can't be a, quote, a positive influence, because all I can do is screw up both his arithmetic and his spelling, as a matter of fact, unless I am as competent as he.
I think they have to go with some other approach to it. If the people are getting worried about this and want to eliminate it, cut it or reduce it, they're going to have to approach it from some different direction.
What we're trying to do is to build into the into our community and into our society as many positive opportunities as possible to prevent the necessity for, quote, antisocial behavior, recognizing that no matter how well you design a system, there are still going to be individuals and kids who are going to have to act out their aggression in a certain kind of way in society, which society can't afford to accept.
A few of Connecticut schools have begun to incorporate a work experience program where students spend one half their time in the classroom and one half their time on the job. Joe Gordon of Weaver High School in Hartford explains his school's new program.
We worked with a group of five slow learners, and we had the teacher and the students together for three periods a day. And so we could choose any one of those three periods to pull them into the cafeteria program, as long as the classroom teacher understood that we were going to do this and how he could include in his regular program some of the things that they were learning in the cafeteria. For example, he included as part of his math instruction the conversion factors involved in recipe making, where youngsters were given recipes, let's say, that were geared to 25 servings. They had to either convert them upward or downward, depending upon how many they were going to serve out of this. He used that as a math problem. The five who were involved in the program were very interested in this and did a fair job at it. Remember, they're slow learners, and we have to keep everything at a pretty simple level for them.
In Bridgeport, a program of getting impoverished youngsters to understand the world around them by seeing it and understanding it through field trips. Lester Silverstone, Director of Guidance for the Bridgeport Schools.
Last week we sent a bus load of youngsters from one of our neighborhoods where educational expectation has previously been very low. This is a school which has contributed a number of dropouts. We sent this bus load of youngsters to Southern Connecticut State College. The results have been far beyond our expectations. We found that they were thrilled to be there. The teachers reported that they hardly recognized these youngsters as the ones they've been working with all year. They were alert, they were filled with questions, they were excited about education, and we had an added dividend that we hadn't even expected. The youngsters recognized that teachers had to be people just like themselves. They were quite excited about the fact that these teachers in training were only a few years older than they were, that they looked just like they did. They recognized people from their own neighborhoods, and we had a great deal of trouble getting them to come home. They wanted to stay. They went through dormitories, laboratories. The teachers report to us that their attitude in class is different. Education is meaningful to them now.
And at Stamford High School, where a work experience program has been in operation for many years, already overtaxed guidance personnel are increasing the number of students in the program. The picture is repeated in nearly every Connecticut school district. Too few to handle too many. New programs are expensive, but then it is for our children.
It's going to be costly, but children are our greatest human resources. What do we have money for, except for our children? A car, a fine home, a luxurious diet. We'll give them all of these things afterwards, but the money has to be spent for every child in the United States, because every child in the United States is just as important as every other child. And we can reach the children, then we won't have to worry about the adults.
Yes, all those years have proved to me how foolish a young boy can be. I mark my age so old and gray, a wiser man I am today. And here I'll be in this old home. My wife is dead, I'm all alone. I just can't help to think of how I'd change my choice if I could now reverse those years and never see how miserable a man can be.
To make learning a pleasure requires knowledge, skill, and direction of a high order, especially in working with children from homes without any cultural attachments. This child is certainly not pleased with his situation, but he does want the teacher genuinely to understand him, to see that in some way he is grappling with the problems in his life, and not to patronize him. He wants respect, not love, nor does he want a handout. The only way the teacher can honestly give him respect is by comprehending his way of life and his efforts to overcome the negative aspects of his poor home life. The best teachers may be the true heroes and saints of this age.
And now I've said all that I can. I'm very tired, but please, young man, if a decision you must make, the proper step I hope you'll take.
We actually don't have that much time to let this thing go to waste, because most people today find it wrapped up in their little worlds. They don't look at what's outside, and they don't even care what's going on until it's too late. That's right, we always do something in this country when it's too late.